Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Go.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me, if you just tuned in. If you've been listening already, thanks for that, too. I appreciate it. Obviously, you're a highly intelligent individual. Don Boudreaux is one of the smartest guys I know, too. He's a dean of the School of Economics at George Mason University. I met him many years ago when he was at the Foundation for Economic Education. And just a kindred spirit of mine. And actually, in terms of free trade, he's actually kind of, he doesn't know this probably, but he's kind of my mentor. He's what I aspire to be when it comes to free trade. And he's our good friend, Don Boudreaux. Welcome back to the show.
Well, it's good to be here, Jim. Thank you.
It's good to have you back. Will you take that job, Don?
Oh, sure. I think I've already had it. But that's my passion in life.
Well, it is mine too. And I always knew I was a free trader. I just didn't know what it was. I didn't know what the graduate level free trade environment looked like. And you certainly introduced me to that. Don, before we get into the economy, I want to talk a little bit about a different part of a smaller part of the overall economy, mm-hmm. And that's the place where you are from. You hail from New Orleans,
yep.
And you were back down there over the holidays. And I want you to give us a report on what you found.
It's devastated. It's much worse than I thought it would be just by looking at the news reports. One of the things that struck me is, I used to live, my parents' first house when I was born was in the Ninth Ward.
Uh-huh.
And that is devastated, as the news reports show. But the worst part of the city is a place called Lakeview, which is an upper class neighborhood right at Ground Zero where the main levee break occurred, and it's just utterly devastated. There are cars in trees, there are refrigerators on rooftops, sofas on rooftops. It's very hard to digest. All the lawns and shrubbery are dead because the salt water and brackish water.
Right. And chemicals probably.
Yeah, it's just devastated. I know at least a month ago, only about 60,000 of the city's 600,000+ who lived there before Katrina have returned. So that means, you know, no more than 10% of the city's population is back.
Well, let me ask you this question. Do you believe that New Orleans, of course, it'll never be back the way it was? That's impossible. But do you think it will come back to any semblance of what it was?
I think so. And the main basis for my prediction is I think about what's happened to other cities. And you think of what happened to Hiroshima just 60 years ago. And that was much more devastating than Katrina. This is an atomic bomb that killed 100,000 people, literally leveled the city. And you know, it came back, and that was in a country that's not as wealthy as the United States. It's in a country that was in a time that's not as wealthy as our current time, and those people were able to rebuild. And so, I'm thinking, if people there can rebuild, so too can New Orleans. Now, whether it should rebuild, that's a
physically rebuilding, though, Don, and getting back to the ambiance, the spirit of New Orleans that you grew up knowing, will that ever be back? Those are two different things.
Yeah, that's true. I think it will. First of all, the French Quarter, which is Ground Zero for the ambiance of the place.
Yeah.
The French Quarter wasn't that badly.
They're
French
back in business, aren't they?
It's still to the extent that they're not. It's not because of physical damage. It's because there aren't enough workers to man all the places, mm-hmm. not enough customers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it will. I think all this talk about New Orleans being resettled near Baton Rouge, I don't think it's going to happen. I think New Orleans will come back, and I think it will come back pretty much with the ambiance. Now, let me say that ambiance is both good and bad. It, mm-hmm. it's the thing that makes
some of it was
good.
Undesirable, wasn't it?
Some of it was undesirable. It has the fact that it's a great party city. Well, partying is great, but you can't just party your way to economic prosperity.
And there was a lot of crime down there. No question about that. What about Tulane? Is it coming back? Will it come back to New Orleans?
Well, the the rectors of the university made, I think, a wise and courageous decision. They dramatically scale back the size of the university. So I think it will. It won't come back as it was before.
They lost a lot of stuff, though, didn't they?
They lost a lot of stuff.
And a lot of research, I think, a lot of records, things like that.
Yeah, and the other universities do too. It's. But let me point this out. The silver lining around this horrible cloud, this is unquestionably the worst physical disaster, beside war, to ever hit the continental United States.
Right.
However, it doesn't even rank very highly in terms of number of deaths.
Right.
Only about, at most, 1,400 people were killed. That's an amazingly good statistic,
right,
considering the extent of the physical devastation.
Well,
means that something is going right.
Well, exactly. And the thing is it could have been better. We actually had the ability to minimize those, and we just
didn't do it.
That's right. Stand by. When we come back, I'm going to get Don to take us on a little tour of how the economy was in 2005 and what he thinks it'll look like in 2006. It's 20 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Here's Joe Cocker to take us out. Welcome back. 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Don Boudreau, the Dean of the School of Economics at George Mason University. And I got to, I know I've said this before, Don, but knowing you and knowing the job that you have, this has got to be like a dream. It's got to be a dream come true for you.
It is indeed.
To have that job.
Indeed.
I mean, it's whenever I think of somebody who's perfectly suited for a job, I think about you and as the Dean of Economics at George Mason University, a great school, and the tradition and the heritage of that of your job is known by many, and I'm glad you're there to carry that on. By the way, Don, if you listen to one side of the political spectrum, you would think that we were about to be washed into a depression, that all is lost. But then you walk around and you see an economy hit by all kinds of challenges, including storms and war and threats some inflation and energy prices going through the roof, and yet the U.S. economy still grew at about 4% last year.
Right.
Which ballgame are these two guys watching?
Well, the ball game I'm watching is the one that's on the more optimistic side. It's hard to make actual predictions. I mean, things can go wrong, but the great advantage of the U.S. economy, despite all of its imperfections, and Lord knows there are many, but the great advantage, it still remains largely open and entrepreneurial. There's an entrepreneurial culture in the United States. Tax rates are not, in my opinion, they're too high, but they're not oppressive.
Right.
And private property is still largely secure. I mean, it's still very secure, despite the Kelo decision earlier in the year, which I disagree with.
Right.
And so because of that, Americans, our openness and entrepreneurial abilities and drive, we just keep creating wealth, which makes us all more prosperous and, creates high-paying jobs. And
why does that irritate certain people? Doesn't it amaze you that there are people who actually are benefiting from the larder of what you just said? They're benefiting from the fruit of the system that you just described. They're benefiting from it in ways that many Americans aren't, and yet they look at it. It's almost like they hate what they see.
They do, because a lot of these people are elites, and they just can't stand the fact that something good is happening that isn't planned and directed by them and their ilk.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that ordinary people in their own everyday lives do things that result in great prosperity and order and wealth, they don't like that. For them, if it's not directed by some bureaucrat or some elite, it's not really good.
They actually believe that it can't last because of that, right?
That's right.
I mean it's going to fail any time now.
They've been saying that for decades. They're always.
But why do they still have credibility?
It's a complicated question, in large part because a lot of people don't know even basic economics to understand how the economy works. Another reason is most of the elites just kind of talk to each other, and so they have credibility mostly with just other elites.
Mm-hmm.
The editors of the New York Times and the Washington Post.
Paul Krugman. Yeah. We don't want to get off on him.
I
wish I hadn't said that because they'll get both of us off on something.
He is a great example. Just in yesterday's New York Times, he actually said
he's a personification of
cannot be trusted to make their own health care decisions.
Say that again.
In yesterday's New York Times, he actually said, Paul Krugman, that ordinary people cannot be trusted. It's neither fair nor realistic to expect ordinary people to be able to make their own health care decisions.
That's what he thinks about you folks,
right.
Regular Americans.
That's right. And so the only alternative then is to turn it over to, bureaucrats and government officials. And while I'm willing to admit that, sure, ordinary individuals a lot of times make mistakes. None of us are perfect. I know I am better equipped to make my own health care decisions than is some stranger in Washington.
Absolutely.
And I know that's true of every other American in the country. We don't need Paul Krugman
Let me tell you something else, Don. One of the reasons why we're not good at making those decisions, if any of what he says is any way true, it's because we haven't had practice at it. But in the 21st century, we're going to get plenty of practice at it, and we're going to become what I call healthcare consumers, not just healthcare patients.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. I think it's inevitable. It's got to happen. Yeah,
it is happening slowly but surely. I think this is a natural progression. All right, Don. Most economists I talk to are predicting 3 to 3.5% growth in 2006. I'm making my predictions up that I'm going to be publishing this weekend. Right now, and I'm going to give my audience and you a little bit of a peek. I'm predicting 4% growth again in 2006.
I hope you're right. I never make growth predictions. I'm not that smart.
But it's so much fun, Don.
Yeah,
work with me here.
Yeah.
I have that kind of confidence in the U.S. economy.
I don't see any reason why the U.S. economy cannot continue forever, as long as politicians keep their hands off of it, to continue to grow and prosper.
One of the reasons why I think that, Don, is because I don't think we're going to have the consistent increase in interest rates 6 weeks after 6 weeks with the new Fed chairman and with all the things that are going on. And I think we're going to wind up with some interest rates that will be more level, and I think people will be able to plan better for that, and they'll be more optimistic. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think Bernanke's already signaled there's a sort of coming end to the interest rate tightening. But my take's just a little bit simpler. I think that keeping tax rates low and lower and property secure is key.
Stand by. Quick break. Folks, by the way, in case you didn't know this, Don is the professional economist. I'm the dangerous amateur economist. So for whatever that's worth, 10 till, I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. Don Brudreau is our guest, and we'll be right back. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and Don Brudreau is our guest and our good friend, the dean of the School of Economics at George Mason University. Don, give us your website, please. I know you've got a blog you want to tell us about.
Yeah, blog is www.cafehayek. It's cafehayek.com. And my colleague Russ Roberts and I give pretty much daily thoughts on the
sometimes state
of the
twice daily.
Sometimes more than twice daily, but
I know.
At least once daily usually. Yeah, on average once daily.
It's a great blog, folks, and I really enjoy it, Don. Don. And by the way, folks, I encourage you to if you got a young person interested in college, I encourage you to check out George Mason University.
Yep.
You want to give us that website, Don?
Yes, just www.gmu.edu. And
right.
go to academics and then go to economics.
Yeah, and you'll find Don and his whole team there.
Yeah.
Don, years ago, you introduced me to Frederick Bastiat, and I keep coming back, and I love to paraphrase him a little bit on something he said that's sort of my touchstone for why I'm a free trader.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what he said, and I'm paraphrasing just a little bit because I think it sounds better. He said, when goods cross borders, armies don't.
Mm-hmm.
When people say to me, why are you a free trader? You know, and why are you, why do you think globalization is a good thing? Why do you think outsourcing is the best thing that ever happened to small business, which I do?
Mm-hmm.
I say, because when goods cross borders, armies don't.
Right. That's right.
How did free trade do in 2005?
Well, everything's relative. I mean, in a way, it did better than it did in 2004 because the brouhaha over outsourcing died down.
Right. Except for dangerous Lou Dobbs.
Well, yeah, he's still out there, but he's you know, the temperature of that debate dimmed a little bit.
Yeah.
It's still there, but it's not as vivid as it was in 2004. On the other hand, the failure to reach agreement on the ongoing Doha round, I think, is disappointing. There were some interesting proposals put forward.
Remind us what was going to happen in Doha.
Well, this is an attempt to further reduce, further open up borders, mainly by getting the U.S. and the Europeans to reduce their agricultural subsidies, which would be a great thing.
These were global. This was a global free trade conference rather than just U.S. and Peru or U.S.
That's right. It involves not every country, but the great majority of countries in the world.
And it failed, basically, didn't it?
It failed because you had the anti-globalization protesters, of course, and then they had some role, but the agricultural interests in the U.S.
Right.
And especially
Europe.
In Europe and Japan are holding it up. They don't want to lose their subsidies and their protection. It's a very greedy, selfish, destructive thing that they're doing. The whole world, including the U.S., Western Europe, and Japan, would be wealthier if we got rid of those subsidies. But politically, it's a very difficult thing to do, and that's what's keeping further advance on opening up trade borders held back.
How toxic do you think 21st century protectionism is right now? How much of an impediment is it?
You know, I go back and forth on this. Some days I wake up and I'm really frightened by it, and other days I look around and think, you know, despite all the brouhaha,
yeah,
you know, borders are still largely open.
Let me ask you.
I think in fact today I'm pretty optimistic. I don't think it's that bad. It could be better.
Could we say it this way? We don't like where it is, but we like the trend.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I always like the trend. The trend's in the right direction, I think. And so I wish it would be faster. As you know, Jim, I'm a free trade absolutist.
Absolutely. That's right. You're a free trade snob.
I'm a free trade absolutist. I don't like people in Washington telling me how to spend my money. And
right.
If I want to buy something from Belgium rather than buy it from Boston, I want the freedom to do so.
Right.
And I think, and I want to accord everyone else that freedom to do so.
Right.
So the trend's in the right direction, certainly over the past few years, but it could be faster. And there's always a risk that things will get reversed, but I don't see that really happening.
Are you optimistic about the democracy and the economy in Iraq?
No. No, I'm not. I hope I'm wrong. I sincerely hope I'm wrong. Democracy may work, but you know, India has democracy, and
yeah.
It hasn't. The fact that people go to vote is a good thing.
You don't
but
think
it's
India's
not,
democracy
it's not sufficient
is...
to make a society free and prosperous?
Yeah.
And so I'm not. I think that the institutions that are required, social institutions required to make people free
right.
and prosperous, have to be in place. And I don't see that in.
But are you comparing? And I got to wrap it up. But are you comparing it to more like what we have instead of what they will wind up having?
Well, it's hard to imagine they would be worse off than they were.
Right.
Under
no,
Scott,
that's right.
Yeah.
I'm that's where you and I part ways. I'm a little more optimistic over there. We'll have to come back and talk about this a little bit later
right.
on.
I
hey, thanks,
right.
Don, for being here. Good job, and we'll see
My
you next
pleasure.
Time. Happy
yep.
New Year. Don
Happy
Boudreau, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back. I will be, too, on the other side of the news. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.